Okay, welcome to the first On Track Off Road podcast, motocross podcast. We're down in the Red Bull KTM team and I'm honoured to be joined here by the world champion, Tony Cairoli. So, Tony, thanks for sparing a bit of time for us. Busy Grand Prix, we've finally seen some sunshine. It's a bit strange in Lockett because we usually have one day that's wet and one that's kind of dry, but we've had a good start to the GP.
Yeah, today was strange. The weather was really warm, and it's one of the very first time this year. We had always rain on Saturday, and I'm pretty happy with today's result, with the winning of the qualification race, and I have a lot of friends here and fans, so it's also from Sicily. They come over here with my parents, with my family and stuff, so it's good to have them around, and hopefully tomorrow they can cheer me up for a good result.
Tony, can you just describe a little bit of, you know, what the Lockett circuit's like for people that have never seen it or never been here before? It's quite different, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a track, I think one of the most beautiful natural track that we have on the GP schedule, and it's a history track because the World Championship is coming here already long, and it's not that I don't like the track, but it's weird for me to ride on. It's really a slippery surface, and the ground is pretty hard, and today I struggle a little bit with the time practice, but then I know that on the race it's gonna be always better for me, so you just have to find your rhythm on this kind of condition, and the track looks nice for the spectators, and really fast the race, and I think it's cool to have GP here still, because we have always pretty tracks always, but most of them are pretty slow with all the jumps, and now we have again a fast track here with natural jumps, so it's nice to race here.
Yeah, you kind of talk about that a little bit, because I mean, people say you can't pass here, it's slippery, some even say it's a little bit dangerous, some of these fast step downs, but then it's part of the character of the World Championship, isn't it, these old kind of venues we come to. I mean, this track hasn't changed for years.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's nice to have, like I said before, to have Lockett on schedule. Before in the years, the World Championship had a lot of this kind of tracks, natural tracks, and pretty hard pack. So now we are for sure with the coming tracks that we have the last few years, the new tracks that we rode on, like Mexico or Brazil or even Russia, the tracks are more slow and more jumps and more technical for sure. I like it more, but I think it's nice to have one natural track like this.
Tony, I've got you down as winning in 2005 and also 2010, so does that mean the next win's not going to come till 2015?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just numbers. I don't care about that. Like I said before, it's not one of my most preferred GP, but I think it's the way it is. For everybody, it's the same race, and so I will do my best to win again this year.
I mean, in the press conference earlier on, I mean, of course, we are still on Saturday, you mentioned that the track like this is not so good for your style, where you can't be so aggressive, you can't attack ruts and stuff. Is there a typical Tony Cairoli track on the World Championship? Because you seem to be so good in places like Lierop and Valkenswaard, and, you know.
I don't know. I think I like a track like Latvia or also Russia was a nice track. I like sand for sure. It's my favorite type of ground with sand. But general, I like the most track I like. It's pretty soft pack and many ruts and many lines that where you can invent new stuff and cut the lines and try to pass and yeah, where you can make new things. I like tracks that you can invent new lines and stuff like that, because on a track like Lockett, you have the line that you cannot the fastest line is where everybody is going, so you cannot do so much more.
Maybe it's worth making the point that today as well, the first two riders in the qualification heat were you and Kevin Strybos, 2 350s, so it's the starts have been good this year, haven't they?
Yeah, I work a lot on the starts, and the bike seems to have a good jump out of the gate, and Also, yeah, like you said, also Strivos is also always pretty much on the start, also on the top. So it's it seems that the 350 is going real well, and I think it's a bike where I believe in already a lot of years. So I think it's paying me out also with other riders using it and having a good races.
Tony, you've given up the red plate only once this year after that freak Grand Prix in Sweden. You know, you've since got it back, and Clément de Sales is probably your nearest challenger for these last five races, this last 250 points to win. I mean, honestly, do you think he can challenge you all the way? I mean, there seems to be an opinion that he's not really at the level, he's not your level consistently to go those last five GPs and challenge you.
You know, I'm just I don't want to look back, but for sure for me losing that much points for me was a safety that I had in the pocket already, and I never wished to use it, and we lose 47 points in Sweden, and if I didn't lose it, then maybe I was now with almost 2 GP in front and still 3 GP 5 GP to go, so it was much easier for me, but I think he's doing well for sure, and he's a good contender for the title for sure. He's strong, and if he has a good talent also, and he's pretty fit also during the motors, and so for sure he's at the moment is the most dangerous contender.
Tony, I know you're a busy guy. I just want to talk to you about two more things. The Motocross of Nations is coming up at Lommel, and I've ridden in the past. It must be a big shock for Belgian fans to see this kind of small, skinny kid from Sicily, like, you know, beating the best sand riders in the world. But you are one of the best sand riders in the world now. You've proved it on numerous occasions. So, I mean, you must fancy your chances against the Americans on a terrain like that.
Wow, for me it's not really. I like to race in Lommel, you know, but I don't really think it's. I think the American also can be really fast also on the sand track, and because they're all pretty much talented riders, so they can for sure. It takes a little bit of a while before they get on the rhythm, but I think for sure they are big contender also for the win, even if it's in Lommel, but. My side with the team that we have this year with Philip Parts that is out, I think we cannot do that much, but I hope to finish on top 5 again and make my race and try to do to win for Italy as a hit or whatever.
Maybe it's an individual thing now, you know, if you can try and win the class, then it's a big thing, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure. It's always nice to win at the Motocross of Nation, but what I miss is the win with the team. You know, I really like to be on top with the Italian team, but we had bad luck and we had mistakes in the years, and we also didn't have maybe the strongest team. It's the way it is, and I hope we can. In the future, maybe, if I'm still riding, we can one time win the nation.
Because still one of my favourite races ever is watching you go against Chad Reed at Franciacorta, because that was the world champion versus the AMA champion. You were wheel-to-wheel for 30+2 laps. It was fantastic. I mean, it would be a big deal for KTM if you can do something similar at Lommel with Dungey, because he's in a very good position in the US.
Yeah, for sure. I think Dungey will do really good at the if he's at the nation. For sure, he will do super good. But there is a lot of other guys. At least for the heat win, that they can be there. I mean, the Diker is very strong in the sand and very fast. And Herlings is also really really good. Really fast in the sand. So I think it's gonna be a spectacular race and. It's not more. I think it's gonna be different. That maybe there are gonna be more people that can fight the Americans, not only few, but I think more people, because you know the sand is different. It's a different thing, and for the public, gonna be nice for sure. With maybe the Belgium team gonna be strong and be on the top, but you know. Like I said before, we will do our best with Italy, but we are realistic, and I hope we can finish top 5.
And then next year, Tony, you're contracted to be a factory Red Bull KTM rider again. Do you think it'll be a case of you getting into the winter and then trying a 450 and a 350 again? Will that be the thing, or you completely committed to being on that 350 for the next year?
I like the 350 a lot, and I think it's it's a bike that at the moment that I like it more, so I don't have in plan to ride it 450 at the moment.
And then the big thing next year on the calendar that came out recently for the 2013 World Championship is Majora, a big race for Italians just because of the history of the place. I mean, is that that could, I know you've had some big races at Mantova and also Faenza, but that could really be something that captures a lot of imagination in Italy, couldn't it?
Yeah, the Majora, everybody see Majora like yeah, like a most well, nicest track, you know, in Italy, because they have a good remembrance from old races. I rode there once when I was riding 85, but I don't remember so much the tracks. I think it's cool to have back there the GP, because it's a place in one area that there is a lot of fans and a lot of people like motocross, so it's good to have the GP there, and for me especially that I'm Italian, even better.
Okay, Tony, well, thanks ever so much for your time. Best of luck for tomorrow and of course the rest of the series.
Yeah, thanks a lot, and see you next time.
Okay, the second part of this on-track off-road podcast from the Grand Prix of the Czech Republic. We're here with Fluoride Monster Energy Pro Circuit Kawasaki's Tommy Sell, one of the main contenders for the MX2 title. Tommy, cheers for spending a bit of time for us. Well, I mean, we're on the eve of the Grand Prix here in Lockett. There's still 250 points left, 5 Grand Prix races to run. You know, you're 49 points behind in the series. In Russia, you didn't seem too optimistic about your chances, but, I mean, you know, if there's anything, the freak events that's happened to you this year with the mechanical trouble proves that you still got a big chance.
Yeah, I mean, I can only do what I do. I'm a little bit disappointed or gutted with the DNFs that I've had through kind of freak things, if anything. I don't think I could have ever expected that, and to lose 50 points in one round was just a nightmare, but it was nothing to do with me, so I've got to keep my head up there and just move forward on that and just carry on doing what I'm doing. Like, I feel I put in a lot of work and a lot of time this year, so I can just carry on and try and keep winning races till the end of the season and put myself in good positions, and then hopefully Jeffrey has a bit of bad luck like I have.
I mean, Tommy, it's worth mentioning to people that, you know, you've taken 4 wins this year from 11. You've been on the podium 9 times from 11 GPs, and you've only missed the top 3 in a moto from like 22 motos, you know, 3 times. I mean, that's 19. I mean, it just shows the consistency you've had. It must have, I mean, it must have burned you after Latvia on those 2 DNFs.
Yeah, and the 3 times I missed the podium was a problem with the bike. It was never me. I never crashed and missed the podium once. Even when I've had a first turn crash, I always come back through the second, and so it is gutting for me. But then the other side, I mean, this, it happens. It's motocross, and I can't dwell on it and just go hide, you know, in my bedroom about it. I just have to go race and carry on doing what I'm doing. That's the only thing I can do. Just, I mean, it would be nice now if Jeffrey went and had 2 DNFs and then we dueled it out for the rest of the season, but I probably won't be that fortunate, but we'll see. I just need to carry on and doing what I'm doing.
Do you kind of think, you know, well, my luck's going that way, because, you know, the one kind of moto he does DNF was when you were already out and you had a problem with the tyre in Kagums?
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. You can't really, that stuff, I don't know why it happened to me, but I've always put myself in a good position. Like, I've been on the podium every single moto I finished, and it wasn't even through any fault of my own. When I didn't finish those other races, I didn't crash. It's just, and I don't even think any fault of the team. One time I got hit in a turn on the second corner when I was being cautious, and then another time the moose fell out the tyre, which is not the team at all. It was a Pirelli fit the tyres. And then the other time the oil pipe fell off. So that was a bit, that could have been someone paying a lot, like missed paying attention. But at the end of the day, no one wants DNFs. It's not like anyone's done it on purpose. It's just a mistake. And yeah, we just have to push on.
And then just a word about your rivalry, because it's been, you know, it's had that kind of intensity, hasn't it? Because there's only been 2 of you really pushing for victories and also for the title. And you corrected me yesterday by saying, you know, it was in Portugal where you kind of said to him, look, let's just stop mucking around on the start, stop pushing each other over. And since then, it's been a little bit quieter, hasn't it? But then, you know, Herlings has attracted his own problems this year.
Yeah, I think for me, I think it's good having a rivalry. I think it's good for everyone to get in it, like, Dutch fans are obviously all for Herlings, the English fans are all for me, and the British fans. So I think it's a good thing for a sport to have that. I mean, I enjoyed having that, and it didn't worry me. The only thing that worries me is when someone's going to swerve across you on the start like he was doing. I think it's a bit stupid when we both put in so much work to to do that on a start straight, you know, that shouldn't be how it comes down to it. And that's what I said to him in Portugal. I said, let's stop that, because if I'm going to go down, I'm going to put you down as well, and then it's not going to be good for either of us. So then that stopped. So it's been a little bit more fair since then. But I mean, he's a good rider, and I feel like I'm a good rider. Like, I feel we've been equal year, and he's had his race wins and I've had mine. And yeah, unfortunately I've had a couple of DNFs, and that's put the points gap up. But other than that, it's been pretty, like, I'd get a race win, he would get a race win, and that's how it's been. But I think it's good to have rivalry. I think it's good for everyone, the fans, everyone at the race looks forward to it, I think, when you come out and it's just us two going at it.
Tommy, I mean, it's been, you're probably entering the twilight section of the silly season now. I mean, has anyone, any of the other riders in the paddock come up to you and say, come on mate, sort it out, because I want to sort my ride out, because you're, you know, like at the top of the barrel, really, at the top of the peak, everybody wants your signature first, and then, you know, then the rest falls into place. I mean, it must be a pretty cool feeling for you to be wanted like that, but then it must be difficult for you to make decisions.
It is difficult to make decisions, because all these teams are very good teams. There's a lot of good people behind each team, and the team I'm on now. So it's just a difficult... It is nice to have all these people wanting, but it's also a stressful time for me, and especially when it comes down to it, like, it has to be signed soon. So that's just how it is. I mean, I think when I sign, everyone else is kind of getting a sign now. The teams that it's not looking like I'm going to ride for are signed their riders. So it is all coming down to it. Like, everyone's nearly signed. It's just me and I think a couple more guys when I've signed it are all falling into place for them. But it's just a position I need to look out for my future at the end of the day. I think it's no one, if you're doing bad, no one's going to worry about you. That's how it is in any sport. Like, unfortunately, that's just, if you're not getting results, you soon won't be on the money and you won't have a ride no more. So you have to look out for number one, and that's yourself in this sport or in any sport.
And just people who might be listening and maybe don't realise, I mean, you're the UK's top motocrosser. You reached the age of 23, so you have to move out of the MX2 class into the Premier class MX1. I mean, just shed a bit of insight there, because those offers, I mean, obviously you're not, the money, the financial side's going to be good. Is it a case of you just trying to find the right bike or trying to find the right group? What is it a little bit about?
Yeah, it's more the right bike. I think everywhere I could go right now, the money's the same. So it comes down to me and the bike and the team that I end up wanting to ride for, and my future, where I think I can win and where it's going to set me up. I mean, if you're winning on any team, you're always going to be wanted. So I need to put myself in a position and a setup where I feel I can win.
When you were hurt in America with your shoulder, did you ever think you'd, well, I mean, you arrived to this position where you're being fought over by factory teams and, you know, contracts are being dangled in your face. I mean, it must have seemed far away when you were just, like, recovering and going through constant rehab.
Yeah, it is a nightmare in this sport when you get injured, just because, like I said before, when you're not doing well, no one wants you. So then I had one year where I was injured, but I really felt that year that I was the fastest I'd ever been. So I wanted to prove myself that year, but it didn't happen because I got injured so early on, and then I had the opportunity to come back to Europe because that was the best deal at the time. So that's what I did, and that's brought me to where I am now with CLS. But I feel like I'm a good rider. When I look at other riders, I feel like there's not many riders out there right now that can do what I can do on a bike. Like, I feel like if I'm going to go MX1, I'm going to be a top contender right away. And I have the confidence in myself to do that. So it's a big belief that I have myself, just because of how I work and just the effort I've been putting in and working on lately. So I'm really looking forward to proving that in MX1, and just hopefully my future is going to be bright from here.
And then, you know, we're here in the Grand Prix of Czech Republic on a Saturday. This time in 2 weeks, going to be home GP, Madeley Basin, the British Grand Prix. You know, first off, the stuff for next year, are you going to make it? Are you going to say, right, I want to know 1 week before this race, because you're going to have enough to deal with over that sort of 3 or 4 days, because it's obviously a big MXGP festival as well. There's going to be a lot going on, a lot of people there.
Yeah, I do. I would like to get it done, just so it's not a worry, but it's kind of me that's holding it up. Just the deals are there. It's nothing we need to negotiate more. The deals are just there, and I need to make a decision. So, but it needs to be the right decision, because there's so many good guys in MX1. Like, I watched the heat race today, and there was Tony out front, and then Strybos. He had a good race, but then from 3rd to 15th, there's so many guys that you need to put yourself in a good position. You can't just be half-arse and and riding out there trying to, I don't want to be a 10th place guy at the end of the day. I want to be a guy that's fighting for race wins, and you have to be, everything has to be right in that class to do that, just because there is so much talent in it.
And then just a word about Matalee, because you mentioned to me yesterday that, you know, it's good for you to feed off that support and that buzz going around like your home GP, and Herlings is probably going to be in for a little bit of a tough time, a little bit of heckling and barracking from the home fans after your rivalry this year. But then, like you mentioned, he can also feed off that, and to beat you at Matalee would be a big thing for him, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if I was in his position, I'd want to win there. So, and being in the position I'm in, I'd love to win there. You know, I can't wait to go there. It smiles, just like, if I can win there, it'll probably be the best moment, you know, I've had, just because of how many fans are behind me this year. I've never had that support, and it's amazing for me to have, just to look on Twitter every day and see the messages that I get. Like, it's a really good feeling, and I'm so happy to have all these British people behind me, and also a lot of people from even Holland and other parts of the world. I have so many fans right now, and it's amazing to do that. But to win for the British people and just make their weekend and make my weekend, like, I'll be so happy to go there and do that. So I just, hopefully it's sunny and I can get the job done for them.
Are you tapping a little bit into that Olympics vibe and, you know, that sort of patriotism and surge of, you know, national feeling going around the country at the moment?
Yeah, it's good. It's always nice to see anyone win an event, but the Olympics is the only channel that's on at my house right now, just... So whenever I get a chance, I just watch that, whatever event it is. And then, so it seems to always be a British person in it about somewhere, so cheering for them. And then when you see them get a gold, then it's nice to see. I mean, I get goosebumps just watching other people win, so I need to go do it myself. And yeah, I just want to get it done at Matalee.
Well, from a British perspective, and also for the GP in 2 weeks' time, you know, I hope you get a good result tomorrow, and you know, that title chase can go all the way down to the last race in Germany.
Yeah. Me too.
All right, cheers, Tommy. Thanks very much.
Okay, well, we're in a barren press room here after the Grand Prix of Czech Republic, round 12 of 16 in the FIM Motocross World Championship. I'm joined by Paul Malin, expert TV commentator and, of course, former GP winner. Paul, we're just going to go over a couple of the main issues that's gone on here today. First of all, we got the winner in MX1, Tony Cairoli, picking up his 50th career victory. In second place was Christoph Porcel on that Kawasaki. Third place, Clement Desau in MX2. We had Jeffrey Herlings going 1-1 again for the second GP in a row. Tommy Searle in second place, and Zach Osborne making the top three for the first time. I guess the big news from today, this weekend, is Cairoli. I mean, I think that's his seventh Grand Prix win from 12, and, well, 50. It's a big old number.
Yeah, Mr. 50, Tony Cairoli, you know, in a short time as well, his first Grand Prix coming back in 2004 at Nemours in MX2. So he's racked him up pretty quickly as well. But I was looking at the stats. Joe Robert, a six-time world champion, who he's tied third in the all-time win list now on 50 Grand Prix victories. A six-time winner, Cairoli, ironically, going for his sixth world title. I might need to do a little bit more digging to see where Stefan Evans was when he won his 50th in terms of his titles gained and everything else. See if there's a pattern there, yeah. You know, and that kind of thing. But, yeah, great day for him. Another double moto victory. 13 moto wins for the season. Yeah. So, you know, and it's hard to imagine that round 9 in Uddevalla in Sweden, when he had a 47-point lead,
DNF, yeah.
A double DNF, got overhauled in the championship by Clement Desau, was down 3 points as he went to Latvia. And in 3 Grand Prix, he's turned it around, and he's now 30 points clear. It just shows you the confidence of the guy, the mentality of him. And when you look at it like that, it's easy to see how and why he's been able to be so dominant for such a long time, yeah. In a similar way to Stefan Evans, and it just goes to show a lot of it is all in the mind.
I remember seeing, you know, DeSalle's face kind of on the podium really in Sweden. It was a look of bemusement really. He was just holding up the red plate. It was kind of like, well, I didn't expect this at all. And I think, you know, maybe deep down there somewhere, he knew that it wasn't really deserved. And, you know, because Tony has been the outstanding rider, you know, this season. And for me, it was a case in point in the second moto when he was in fourth place, just sitting nicely behind Christoph Porcel there. And then I think from like the fourth lap in, he just went for it. That was it, you know, and he just made kind of, you know, pretty light work really of getting through to the lead.
Yeah, and just before we get back to today's race, after Sweden, when DeSalle did take the red plate back, of course that was a year to the day almost, within a couple of days, that he lost the championship lead, having picked up an injury at a Belgian championship a week or so prior. So a lot of irony in how championships work out and that kind of thing. But yeah, since then it's been Tony Cairoli's. And getting back to today's race, that second race, I think a lot of the reason why Tony Cairoli was then just able to pick his moment was there was somebody else we've not mentioned, Max Nagel.
Max Nagel, yeah, of course. You know, he's come back in at first GP of the season, Paul. And Zach Osborne actually said in his MX2 press conference that, you know, the rest of the riders had a lot of moto time, a lot of race time, but Max kind of a little bit went against that comment, didn't he? It was his first GP, it was his first serious race of the year, and he was flying.
Yeah, he did an ADAC German Championship race 1 week ago at Geldorf, rode the 450. I think he did a sand race as well a couple of weeks before that, maybe. But the thing with Max Nagel that has impressed me is his original date that was earmarked to return was the French Grand Prix at Saint-Jean-d'Angély, the beginning of June. And obviously he got closer to that date and decided, you know what, I'm not ready to make that return. I'll put it off. And the interviews leading up to that were very positive from KTM. We don't want you to rush, so come back when you're ready to come back, you know. And obviously he's left it until five rounds to go, and it seems to have paid off for him.
But in that time, KTM issued a statement saying, sorry, you're out of our team for next year. So it was almost a case of where he came out today and thought, right, I've got to do something to let people know I can still do the job. But then maybe there was also just a little bit of anger there, you know, a wish to almost like flick a couple of fingers at KTM and say, look, you know, you've written me off too early.
Possibly, but our MX Live TV show that we did today, I had Max Nagel in the studio with us, and the first thing I've been struck by, I guess, the whole weekend is his calm persona. Max Nagel, in some instances last year, maybe riding with the injury, and I asked him the question, when things weren't going right, he seemed a little bit frustrated because of the injury. He knew he could push but couldn't, he was restricted and everything else, and would get wound up very easily as a result of that. And I said to him, you know, you've come back in, you're 12 rounds down, your first race back, yesterday in the qualifying and even before that, he just walked around, kept himself to himself, very calm, very relaxed, hasn't really sort of got anything to be stressed about. And that first race today, third, know, it was a great statement for him to say, look, I'm back, I'm in the shop window, I'm a free agent at the end of the season, come get me. And he hasn't done himself any harm at all with fourth overall in this Grand Prix.
And I think, you know, it's an important to have another addition to MX1, because we were talking earlier about Tony Cairoli pretty much having things his own way, or at least having that speed superiority in the class. And, you know, with Stephen Frossard out, David Fullaparts out, you know, the factory Honda rider's not quite firing, you know, and then top form, then to have someone as lively as that and as interesting as that, it's, you know, it was quite a kick up the ass for the series here.
Yeah, and he got one of his trademark hole shots as well in that second race, and that was great to see, you know. Certainly took it to the guys for the first eight laps. Clément DeSalle had to figure out a way to close him down first before he went through. When he did, eventually, it was pretty easy. But at that point, Tony Cairoli was sitting down in fourth place behind Christophe Porcel. But those four riders today were head and shoulders above everybody else. I thought I'd see a challenge from Gauthier Paulin, maybe Xavier Borg. Tanel Lioc has always gone well here, certainly the last couple of years. Didn't see his threat. Rode okay in the second race, but other than that, it never really came from anywhere else. But those four riders provided enough entertainment to leave us wanting more at Matchley Basin in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, I mean, after the first motos, I thought, well, this is going to be the easiest race report of the year, because it was very static, it was pretty processional. I mean, there was not a great deal going on. It was going to be a case of this Grand Prix, here's the results, this is what happened. But then the second race, we had that fantastic period of tension between Tommy Searle and Geoffrey Herlings, which we'll get to in a moment, another talking point from this race. But then, you know, in MX1 it served up another treat with four riders going at it. And, you know, I don't know if you saw it on the TV, but for me, the move and the meeting, and I said this to Christophe Porcel afterwards, was the way coming down the big step down, the scariest, the fastest, you know, probably one of the trickiest parts of the track. He was right behind DeSalle, completely squared the corner and carried such momentum going up the hill past the pits.
made the move to take second position than it was. Of course, he had a slight crash, which he laughed about again, you know, after the GP, and said, you know, what a mistake to make. But you know, he liked that move, and wow, it was something pretty special to see. And you think, you know, after the first race, where Christoph was maybe 2 to 3 seconds away from Tony's rear wheel for that pretty much the duration, you think, go on, just push a bit harder, take a risk, get close to him. He didn't do that, but then, you know, in that second moto, maybe the track was a little bit rougher, a little bit more options there, but he just went for it, and my jaw hit the floor. I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, we didn't see the pass on the TV. It was just suddenly Purcell was in second position, but he only kept it for half a lap before that. Yeah, lost the front end in turn one. But I spoke to him at great length, actually, in Latvia. We did a thing for him with Monster, and then it was one of those days where he felt like he wanted to chat a little bit more. So I just thought, okay, I'll take advantage of the opportunity. And I asked him about the recent events, Sweden Grand Prix, Tony Cairoli, 2 DNFs, 3 points behind in the championship at that point, going into Latvia. And I asked him, you know, now that the top four, which was obviously DeSalle, Cairoli, Christoph and Gauthier Paulin, had closed right up again, how did he view the championship from that point? And he said, to be honest, I wasn't really that fussed that the championship had got that big, because the run-in after Russia for him was tracks that he liked. Obviously, this one in the Czech Republic, he's always gone well here. He said the surface was to his liking, and obviously he proved that today. But also Matley Basin, where we're going 2 weeks' time, he said he'd always enjoyed riding well there. He'd always got good results there. Then we've got Faenza, we've got Teuschental. The only one where there was maybe a little bit of doubt would be Lierop, where we know Tony Cairoli can go fast anyway. But if it came down to it, and a real push for the championship, which we're not going to see now between those four guys, there were certainly tracks on the agenda where Christoph Purcell would show his intent, and he's certainly done that today, and I can't wait for Matley.
Well, you made a remark there about the World Championship, and just looking at the standings now on this piece of paper I've got in front of me, 30 points the difference between Tony Cairoli and DeSalle, so he's got that cushion again. He's eking out. That's over a moto now. He's got Christoph Purcell in third position, 57 points back. Gauthier Paulin's pretty much out of it. He's 90 points away. I mean, there's only 200 left to win in the final four GPs. So, you know, Tony Cairoli, I mean, he could, in theory, you know, could wrap it up by Faenza. I mean, it could be another, you know, memorable Grand Prix there. I mean, 2008, David Philipparts, I mean, they were incredible scenes when he became the first Italian MX1 champion, was carried on everyone's shoulders to the podium. That was a pretty magic day for David. But Cairoli's there.
And Tony Cairoli that year, of course, got injured in 2008 when it would have been the perfect weekend to have Philipparts and Cairoli, double champions, Italians, both of them, on home soil in Faenza. May still see that with Cairoli, like you say. I don't know, the MX1 Championship, I mean, you can't take anything away from Tony Cairoli at all. To do what he's done the last three races, to turn it round from a three-point deficit to 30 points back in front, just calm, level-headed, and definitely stepped up his game this year.
Yeah,
you know, last year, it was a slow start to the season for him. I think he got sidetracked by the whole American thing, you know, wanting to go, maybe didn't need, you know.
He was a couple of months in California, wasn't he?
Yeah, and maybe he just got into that whole lifestyle thing, the weather and all the rest of it, and maybe riding the tracks and thought, yeah, maybe one day I want to come out here. But last year, when it looked like he was in danger of losing a fifth world title, you know, when he took the lead, it was like, you know what, I actually like winning. I like winning in Europe. Titles, world championships, I want them. I want more of them. I want more Grand Prix victories. And I remember speaking to him in Uddevalla last year, actually. He was staying in the same hotel as us. And it was shortly after when he'd just taken the lead in the championship, or he was on the verge of taking the lead in the championship. And I said, so the plan now then is, I guess you're going to be staying in Europe. He said, yeah. I said, so you're going to be chasing records? He went, yeah, that's what I want to do. And you know, on paper, you can say, looks like it might be tough to beat Stefan Evert's, you know, 10 world titles. But, you know, if he goes for six now, what is he, like 25 years old, 26 years old? It's possible that he could do it, but he has to win a title every year from now on in. That's, of course, if he wants to go that far.
I mean, Paul, Tony's won 7 races from 12 this year. I mean, I'll put it to you that, you know, if Stefan was racing now, he might have a harder deal, you know, claiming. I think 2006, he would have won 14 races out of 15. I mean, I think MX1 now is a little bit more, it's a bit younger, it's a little bit more hungry, a little bit more action-packed.
But you know what, having said that, it's all about eras and generations, isn't it? You know, you look at the guys from, you know, Joao Robert and Roger de Costa when they were 5- and 6-time world champions. And then Eric Gabors, you know, Eric Gabors to win 5 in the era that he was in with Mullab and Thorpe and, you know, in a period of Brad Lackey and Håkon Carlqvist and whatever. There was a lot, you know, of great names out there in times when championships should have been harder to win, but those guys, and I think the top guys, always remain consistent. You know, you get to the halfway point of the championship in whichever era, whichever generation, and you know they go on and continue to dominate. And you know, we can pick holes in records from everybody and everything else, but Stefan Evert's at the time was the best of his generation, and he got out at the right time when he said he was going to go for another year, which was his 10th title. I was thinking, maybe you're just 1 year too long and it'd be a shame to go out losing a championship. Yeah. But he surprised everybody and, you know, brought home that 10th title and thought, right, that's it, nice even figure, get
and
out.
He wanted 100 wins.
And it was, 101 victories. And, you know, ironically, on the other side of the ocean, Ricky Carmichael at the same time, 102 victories or whatever, 10 years undefeated and whatever, and that whole kind of similar... you
career,
know, pattern emerged,
on
opposite sides, and obviously great respect between those two guys.
I think Cairo's got a better 350 this year. I really think they've worked on the power of that bike, because there's no way it was starting as well as there's no way this year has been starting a lot better than it was last year. And I think you can see he's got a little bit more speed, he's got a little bit more power in that engine, and he's playing with it a lot more.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the season, for the last few years, certainly since 2008, I've been able to test factory bikes as they became available at the end of the championship. And obviously, I rode Tony Cairoli's 2009 World Championship winning 450 Dakali Yamaha, and then the next day I rode Max Nagel's 450. And the difference in rideability and power delivery was chalk and cheese. Max Nagel favouring a big powerhouse, you know, hard to handle machine, but that's what he favoured. Tony Cairoli, on the other hand, something nice and smooth. When he signed for Red Bull KTM and took out the 350, there's a lot of scepticism, is it really a 350 and everything else? But actually, you know, you could see the difference, you could feel the difference when you rode it. And while it didn't get him out the start as cleanly as a 450, it was certainly very easy to ride. And you know, but last year's bike, you know, Mark II of his 350s, certainly felt more like a 450, and obviously not riding the 2012 one at the moment. You know, there have obviously been gains, massive gains, in terms of how that bike gets out of the start. And of course, we've seen the problems in MX2, where those guys had problems getting out the start in the first round. Jeffrey Herlings, to name the main rider that suffered with that. But Tony Cairoli, whatever they've done with the guys at Red Bull KTM this year, certainly giving him a massive advantage, getting him out the start, and it's certainly made his job very, very easy. Well, a lot easier indeed.
Let me just drag you across, because you mentioned Jeffrey Herlings there, and that's another main talking point. We chatted about Max Nagel, a spectacular comeback. Tony Cairoli reaching 50 career wins and now eking out a 30-point lead in MX1. But, you know, another pretty big thing today, you know, we saw the first kind of real shootout between, like, Tommy Searle and Jeffrey Herlings. Tommy afterwards kind of saying that he didn't feel so great, you know, speed-wise. He felt a bit tired in the second moto. Couldn't quite reply to the challenge left by Herlings, but you know, they were battling there for second position. Tommy had to make a hard move, put Herlings on the floor, and then he had like 4 or 5 seconds, and then it seemed like Jeffrey just went absolutely crazy, riding of course with a supposedly broken rib, suffering a bit of concussion, couldn't ride on Thursday because of the pain, took a lot of painkillers. But his speed in that second moto to chew down that 4 or 5 second gap, make an extended kind of block pass on Tommy. It was fantastic television, by the way, because of the big screens. We could watch it on the far side of the circuit. He just disappeared. Caught Van Horbeck, like, you know, that's another matter. And then he won with 1-1 and won the GP. And then Tommy's now looking at, I think, something like 57 points. It's you know, unless something utterly remarkable happens, it's going to be a tough ask. And another important point after all of this is that we go to Matadi Basin next, as Tommy's home Grand Prix is going to be a juicy reception there for Jeffrey. And then the race after that, in the beginning of September, straight to Lierop in the sand. Jeffrey Herlings is going to be tough to beat there, and also there's going to be a couple of Dutchmen that might want to have a word with Tommy.
Yeah, obviously a lot to cover in MX2 at the moment, but obviously cast our minds back 2 weeks ago, car crash Jeffrey Herling's involved in a car crash. Of course, we all know that now. Head injury and rib injuries. Some people saying, is it the left side? Is it the right side? Well, for Jeffrey Herling's to get on the bike for the first time, apparently on Thursday, and ride in a lot of pain, you know, in the back of your mind, you think, well, maybe then he's going to come here, damage limitation. And but that clearly wasn't the case. You hear that maybe he's going to be conservative on Saturday in pre-practice, maybe not go out in the first one, just do a couple of laps in the pre-qualifying just to get a time in, do the qualifying race, grin and bear it, you know, in pain, a lot of discomfort, riding with rib injuries and stuff. But
I mean, Paul, to cut you off there, I'll put it to you that I think Jeffrey Herlings is brilliant, and he's won the most races, he's certainly looking the most deserving, but was that a little ploy? Was it a case of, like, I'm really hurting here, I'm chewing on painkillers every half an hour?
Well, I'm glad you said that, because there's been a lot of people talking about it, and obviously I'm no doctor, clearly you're not either, and everything else, and it's very easy to sit there.
You went up against guys who are saying,
I've broken ribs.
I'm racing with one leg. I mean, you know,
George Jobe. he was the one that would do the whole gamesmanship thing back in the day. But yeah, Jeffrey Herlings, you know, I don't know whether he broke a rib or not, whether he fractured a rib or not. It went from one rib to two ribs after the first race and after qualifying. So, you know, it's like when he broke a couple of spokes in Faenza after that first turn tussle with Tommy Searle. It went from being three spokes to, like, the half the wheel was missing. I know that, again, from racing, you're missing 15 spokes. You're not going to last half the race, let alone complete the full race and go on and win it.
Everybody.
You know, so, you know, there's a little bit of gamesmanship there and everything else, and a little bit of over-egging the situation. But, you know, did he ever knock on the ribs? Probably. Might have damaged a little bit of cartilage between the ribs or something like that. But, you know, let's dress it up a little bit. Fractured ribs and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
Talking to one or two people, you know, it was a left side and it was a right side. But two things happened today in that second... in the first moto, I think it was, when... no, it was the second moto. Both incidents. Jeffrey Herlings challenging his teammate, Jeremy Van Horbeek, second lap, went down hard on the right side.
Yeah.
Okay, slid along on his rib cage, picked himself up as if nothing had happened.
Big graze on his arm, actually.
Big graze on the arm. And then when Tommy Searle rode it hard down the inside, straight into the rib cage on the left side and landed on the ribs on the left side. So, no discomfort there. Not being cynical or anything else like that, but clearly he wasn't in a lot of pain, unless there is no such thing as pain in his vocabulary. And
or is this that super Belgian medicine?
Yeah, Fritz and mayonnaise. But anyway, he whatever it was, you know, yeah, clearly there was trauma from the car crash a couple of weeks ago. He came here, maybe the pressure was off a little bit because of that. A lot of talk around it and a lot of hype around it. Tommy Searle had to go out there and perform. He didn't. But he gave Jeffrey a hard time, and that, like I say, it was great television. The way that, I mean, I could see it from my monitor on the TV that he was working that corner for three or four or five laps leading into that, and I just thought, if he gets close enough, that is going to be the favoured point on the track for Tommy Searle to go through. Herlings was getting tighter and tighter and tighter, and when you saw the onboard image of Tommy Searle, there was absolutely no room there to manoeuvre, but he was committed. And at the same point, Herlings just tried to turn in a little bit, and the inevitable happened. The two came together. Tommy Searle stayed up, didn't even look back, because I think he knew that Herlings was on the deck. I know there was maybe a little review afterwards in terms of you know, the officials having a serious look at and also the cat and mouse with Herlings going back at Tommy Searle, like, you know, four laps later, but nothing came of it. And you know, it's all square. It's 57 points advantage Jeffrey Herlings.
Well, after all the shenanigans earlier this year, the FIM with their zero tolerance policy, I mean, it's that was two incidents there where it kind of, you know, reignited the fire a little bit. I mean, I'm really...
But it comes down to, doesn't it?
Interested to see what's going to happen in the British Grand Prix.
Yeah, and it really comes down to it. You know, who wants it more at the end of the day? Okay, keep it fair, keep it clean. You're going to get a little bit of contact. That's the nature of our sport. You know, there were some people comparing immediately after the race the incident with, you know, Tommy on Jeffrey, like Jeffrey on Arnaud Tonnes in France. Nothing, you know, a million miles away from each other, you know, because the move on Tonnes was blatant, you know, from right side of the track to the left side of the track, you know, made no attempt to turn right, Jeffrey Herlings. But, you know, having said that, Tommy Searle, yeah, he wanted to get through, and he had to be aggressive to make a move, because the track here split itself into two halves. Between the first corner and dropping down behind the work area into those series of off-cambers before the double-double downhill section, Jeffrey Herlings had the edge. you know, maybe the KTM was hooking up over the speed bumps a little bit better, the acceleration bumps, but you know, Tommy Searle was better the second half, and he worked that into his favour, and eventually that was the opportunity for him. He took it, but he couldn't turn it into a race win. So you know, unfortunately for him, yeah, he got caught by Jeffrey Herlings, and eventually, yeah, his teammate Jeremy Van Horby rolled over and played dead for a few seconds and led him through and steal another 3 points and yeah, helped him in the course.
It's a nice way to put it. Well, I mean, there was a couple of nice quotes from Jeffrey and Tommy as well, and you'll be able to read those guys in the latest issue of On Track Off Road, which comes out on Tuesday the 7th. If you're not already, if you're not already read it, and you're listening to this later in the week, Paul, in this staying in MX2, just another couple of quick worthy mentions. Zach Osborne on the podium for the first time with two fourth positions. That was pretty solid from him. Same points and just nudging Jake Nicholls. It could have been two Brits on the podium. Jake wholly deserved the podium today, and just you know, pipped by Zach in that second moto, the race classification determining who gets that trophy. And then you know, another French talent, Romain Fevre, taking fifth place overall. So
yeah, his best overall finish in his MX2 career. So the Bodo Schmidt Motorsport KTM rider, yeah, the French European, the French rider, the European champion in European MX2 last year. Bit of a slow start to the season for him, but certainly the second half, you know, he's already been 7th overall, 5th overall this weekend, really starting now to get his attention noticed, you know, by the teams out there and everything else. Not sure how long his deal is for, you know, with that team and everything else, but certainly a kid to look out for now that he seems to have got settled down. But quick mention, Jake Nicholls, as you say, I mean, I got a little bit excited over the fact that I thought he was on the podium, because looking at the points a few laps before Zach Osborne passed him, I thought Zach could still pass him, but obviously forgot to realise that, you know, he takes him. There's obviously a couple of points lost, a couple of points gained. Thought Zach had it, or Jake had it overall, and that would have been a perfect double for Jake Nicholls. Third in Moto number one, his first ever podium finish, if you like, and he was looking on course for that third overall in a similar way to Jordi Tixier in Latvia a couple of rounds ago, but it wasn't happened for him. But yeah, good result for Zach Osborne. Had a tough time since Sweden, his first race back, you know, just self-inflicted mistakes and that kind of thing, and one or two little injuries, injuries and that kind of thing. But good to see him on a podium, and you know, that'll set him up perfectly for the British Grand Prix at Matterley, of course, home race for him. Steve Dixon Workshop, about 15 minutes down the road.
Yeah, the Brits are coming on strong. If you're French, then you've got to be laughing. I mean, you've had some incredible riders in the last couple of years. Marvin Musquin, Gauthier Paulin, Stephen Frosso all coming to the top. And now you've got people like Fevre, you've got Tixier, you've got Dylan Ferrandis as well.
And Tellier, you worked good today.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tellier's always, you know, struggling a little bit with consistency and injury problems. But you've got those young kids coming up, knocking on the door of the podium. You know, some people are a little bit dismissive of MX2 for next year. It's going to be a Jeffrey Herlings show, perhaps. But then, you know, you've got a glut of maybe 7 or 8 young riders coming up who are going to be fighting for podiums. So maybe it will be a case of who's the best of the rest. But you know, we've got some new faces, and you know, I just wish there wasn't so many French. Really, it'd be nice to have a bit more diversity in the nationalities.
Yeah, well, Jeffrey Herlings, again, you know, when you look at MX1 this year. MX2 this year, and the riders have to go into MX1. Tommy Searle, Joel Roulant, who had an off day this weekend, Jeremy Van Horbeek. There's three guys, three main players that, you know, take three out of the top four guys, the top four guys in the championship at the moment. You know, those three guys are going up into MX1. So, yeah, there's been nobody else really that's challenged. Zach Osborne, who's a slow start to the championship because of his injuries. He's stateside next year. So, again, another rider that's from the top five generation, not going to be able to, you know, go with Jeffrey Herlings. Arnold Tonus, if he's healthy, might be able to be a realistic threat and a decent challenge for Herlings. But Herlings has got to be looking at that next year at this stage, saying, well, you know, if he's world champion this year, of course, he's going to be wanting to try and dominate and win every single moto next year, obviously depending on where the first round is. Certainly he's capable of doing that. Stefan Evert's won all but one moto, I think it was, or a couple of motos in one of the years. I think it was Coppins.
Coppins beat him in Ireland.
Yeah, and you know, that kind of dominance hasn't been seen since then, and maybe, you know, who knows, we might be looking, it's possible, depending on reliability, of course, the first year undefeated from any rider in any championship, MX1, MX2, MX3, 125, 255, 100, 650, MXGP, you know, all the classes across the board. And that would certainly be a record to be proud of. You know, we've seen it a couple of times in the States with Carmichael, you know, going undefeated. But as yet, no one's done it in a world championship campaign. So, you know, who knows? Get this year out of the way, maybe that's something to look forward to.
Just to wrap things up, Paul, for me, rider of the day, I think, even though he was superb and took the 50th, I'm going to give it to Herlings on the basis of the fact that he was carrying a little bit of a list of injuries. You know, maybe a little bit of disappointment of the day. It's tough here because it's so hard to pass. If you make, if you fluff your start, then you're in trouble. But I think for me, Gautier Paulanders needed to do a little bit better. It looked like he might have been in for another podium appearance after the first moto. The second race, he was planted right down there. I think he managed to come back to 11th, which in itself wasn't too bad. But we'd like to see some more from him on that Factory Kawasaki. Yourself, any opinions there?
Certainly in MX1, Tony Cairoli, massive milestone for him. Already the most successful Italian anyway. But, you know, closing in on Joel Smets, 57 Grand Prix victories. Still a ways off. Obviously, you know, he's only halfway to Stefan Evert's all-time victory, which is amazing. But, yeah, in MX2, Tommy Searle wasn't at the races today, really. Didn't get out the start in the first race for whatever reason. Made it hard work for himself. Was always, you know, playing catch-up. And the second race, when he steamrolled his way through on Herlings, that was the perfect opportunity to pick up, you know, certainly 3 or 5 points, you know, to bring it back to less than 50. It never happened. And the question at the time was, who wants it the most and how bad do you want it? And Geoffrey Herlings proved today, despite his injuries, you know, whether you like him or not as a person, but as a racer, you've got to respect him. And he went out and he raced today, and he raced hard.
Absolutely.
And the reaction when he came in immediately after the race pretty much said everything. You know, his reaction and Tommy Searle's, it looked like Tommy Searle maybe has just thrown in the towel. Don't want to believe it myself, yeah, but yeah, it's, you know, 57 points now, and it's Geoffrey Herlings' title to lose.
Okay, well, it's been a special track, and we've seen some special things happening. We've got another special meeting on the way in 2 weeks with Mantley Basin in the British Grand Prix, the MXGP Festival. 10 classes, is going to be something major over 4 days. Paul, thanks ever so much for just joining me and chewing over some issues here. And we'll check in again with another on-track, off-road podcast from the UK.
When we get time, you mean. It's going to be a busy weekend. Yeah.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Adam.